Hey friends, welcome back to another edition of Conservation Stories. I'm really excited today. We have a guest that has come down from Plainview, Leighton Scher, and I have asked him to join us because I have been following he and his family for quite a while on the social medias. Yeah. They own Frontier Market down on kind of on the square in Plainview, which is amazing. Yeah. So we're going to talk all about how you got into that business and alternative markets and all kinds of stuff. So let's go.
So so Dad, he got involved in no-till pretty early on. He was really big into the Milo cotton kind of rotation for a while. And then he was in seed crops. And so he really was an early innovator of that, which was pretty intriguing.
Yes, that's amazing.
I don't know if we're still in it quite as hard today. It's just years and years of no-till in cows. You really get some compaction layers. You have to use some tillage. Just to keep our, I don't know if our soil's active, but it's not like a heavy plow. It's just like I have a strip till or something, minimal till.
Yep.
And so anyway, so Granddad has probably got a really intriguing story. He grew up and he came from Vernon, came in at Happy Union, established there.
Okay.
And he learned early on that he was running out of water already. And so he hopped from there and bought the place that actually we're still on today.
Hale County.
It's in Hale County, right east of town by the by the elevators or the prison.
Yes,
which has some people know him.
Yeah.
And he was big into peppers and castor beans, and he was all kind of weird.
Castor beans. Yeah.
He was a very intriguing guy. He was kind of into everything, you know. Anyway, so Dad, he was big into getting some early into the sprinklers. He's probably one of the first couple people that have some sprinklers in Hale County.
Okay.
And so he's got a super intriguing story.
He's pioneering.
He is. He was a pioneer. Mm-hmm. And
that's so exciting.
And so anyway, so back to I came back from tech. I guess I graduated in 17.
Okay.
And I farmed. I'm still farming the same acreage for about 7 years now. About 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I really got to toying with the fact that, you know, this farm is just not generating any cash. Mm-hmm. You know, you farm for a living, you take out these huge operating notes, pay interest, and a couple of guys make money, and you're the one that doesn't, you know? So it really got my brain kind of churning. I was like, man, I got to start thinking on how we can, you know, just generate some cash. I thought, well, I was really, really interested in hydroponics.
Okay, yes.
And the reason it was that is like you're almost – you're not really God, but you sure control a lot.
Yes.
You know, you control water.
More than you do if you stick them out in the ground,
No doubt. And, you know, I was like, man, this would be great for West Texas. You know, you have optimal sunlight. We got great water. You can control the water.
Right.
I mean, there's so many things you click off. So me and Dad took off to Denver, Colorado, and we looked at I wish I could remember, Altuve Farms, I think is the name of that farm. She's a super great person to deal with. Anyway, we went and toured it during COVID. And they had a top greenhouse that was covered in greenhouse on a parking garage.
Oh.
And they had 8,000, let me make it a line. There's quite a few of those upright tires, vertical ag, growing lettuce, arugula, and some of the specialty crops. And, you know, she was kind of sounding off what she was making. I was like, oh, man, you know, we need to do that too. And so
in Denver,
you know, like, man, this is awesome. You know, she's not growing cannabis, which is wild. She's actually growing vegetables, doing very well. And so we got home and really got to toying with some numbers. It's like, okay, let's get honest with ourselves. Like, we probably can't afford a greenhouse just 300 foot by 200 and maintain it. And plus, I don't know if we have the market for it yet.
Yes.
So we went and visited another lady that I think is amazing, is Deanne Yates with Gates.
Oh, I know who that
is. Deanne's a phenomenal little farmer.
Oh, my goodness.
She is an inspiration to me for sure.
Absolutely.
So we went and toured her farm, and Sam, she's part of the TAWC Water Conservation Board.
Okay.
And that's how we kind of got to know her.
Okay.
Dad's part of that.
Okay.
And, you know, we toured her deal, and she's in the Midland market, you know, and having great success.
Yes.
So after that, I was like, okay. We got to be honest. So 2021, we ended up buying two greenhouses or
high tunnels.
High tunnels is a better way for them, I guess. And then our journey kind of started. Prior to that, in 2020, I had while I was in college, I had a research project on our farm, how to increase our profitability on our farm. And this was in Dr. Ryan Rathman's class. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, that our ranch was one of them that got studied. And at the end of the presentation, it's like, okay, what do you do? Do you add, you know, all these different things to the cattle? Do you put a hormone in them? Do you do this? You do that? And I was like, I just don't. I'm not big into that. And I came up with, like, how do you make those, not necessarily bottom-end calves, but the calves you take to the sale barn, more valuable? And so with that, I was like, all right, I want to do a direct beef program. Right. I've already kind of established that. And so, lo and behold, 2019, we kept back some steers, and I think we kept three, I think.
2020 was a great
year. Yeah, you know, just conveniently, you know, unfortunately, 2020 came around.
Yeah.
And we sold three and about 6 minutes. It was wild. And so, you know, if you could sell three, you could sell 12, you know, and if you can sell 12, you can sell 20. And, you know, the race was on. So that really got the ball rolling with, and we knew that we knew we could do it with beef, sure, but we knew we had to have another component if you're going to become relevant for make a sustainable business out of this.
Right.
Because there's going to be a point in time when that freezer's full.
Right.
And no one's going to come knocking at the door to come buy their beef.
Right.
And so we knew that price point, you know, that $1,800 a half or whatever.
Right.
Whatever it is, it's a lot of money.
Yeah.
The consumer just probably is not going to have that for many years to come. And so that's why the vegetable deal really started firing off. So we bought the building, a huge building. It's like 7,000 square foot. And wow, this is a lot of real estate here. And so
Plainview has a great, their downtown, their buildings and stuff.
It's beautiful.
So, yes.
Yeah. So great. Ours is the old Baines Furniture. Some of your listeners may know where that's at. That's a pretty popular furniture store back in the good old days. But
yes.
Anyway, went in and renovated it all, and got a couple freezers, refrigerator, and then the storefront out front. So anyway, the market was really, really on, and Plainview was a pretty unknown market.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to preface that. It was it was very, very unknown. Just not necessarily the amount of money in Plainview, but the amount of available discretionary income. I was really questioning.
Right.
And I was in a roundabout way anti-farmers market just because of the restriction of one-day sale.
Gotcha.
You know, if you have a bad day,
you
have all this product, and what do you do with it?
What do you do with it?
Mm-hmm. So that's what I really want to do this storefront. And so with that being said, I got the doors open in October of last year, And we've had an unprecedented demand. It's been wild.
I love that.
Back to the vegetables. I hate to bounce around too much just for the listener, but I would like to go back to the vegetables.
Yes, let's do.
And West Texas vegetables is a very intriguing thing.
Yeah, because I know where you guys. It's a little more common where y'all are because you have some folks that are growing like a lot of tomatoes.
Mm-hmm, yeah,
and then you have. Like a huge amount of cucumbers.
Yes. Yeah, best made right in the back.
Right. And I know, like, I'm from Brownfield, so sometimes we would see peppers.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
So, but, and watermelons, pumpkins, those kind of things. But not the amount of kind of, not like what you're doing, not the diversity that you've got.
So what we did, we split off, it's kind of funny, we split off 25 acres that was an old, basically dryland cotton farm that was been, you know, been shut off and done for a long time. It's right beside where I live. But we just hadn't used it. It's on a hillside, pretty unproductive ground. And it's like, well, what do we do with this weird corner that's done nothing? And so we built the tunnels on it, and we put some drip irrigation on it. Now we're up to nearly 40, I think I counted last time, it was like 45 different crops, just growing on that 45.
45 different crops. Yeah. Okay, wait. Let's hear them. What's the most unusual? What's something I would never expect?
This past year, we started growing celery. That's been a great.
Goodness! I had no idea. Mm-hmm. 45 different crops.
The one that really put us on the map, without a doubt, put us on the map was the lettuce.
Yeah.
That's been. There's a couple things in the market garden that excel so fast, especially for the taste and the quality you can achieve. And lettuce is one of them, and carrots would be a close second.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start getting to navigate in some of these weird oddball stuff that people hadn't really
tried. Because truly, it does taste better.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, and so it's where I'm having a lot of question marks is okay, do I have too many different crops? Mm. And but the caveat to that is well, who else is going to grow them?
Right.
And having the storefront, you know, I'm trying to encourage more producers to come in, but I mean, they have plenty of demand selling their crop. Why don't come to us, sell wholesale? Mm. You know, I mean, that's a great point to make. I'm not going to blame any producer who's going to give up wholesale to go sell retail and sell out.
Yeah.
So that's been a question of mine on our longevity plan.
So do you ever, outside of your market, are you selling to any other local stores anything?
We have. We started selling a Canyon Farmers Market.
Okay.
We'll sell that every Saturday. You know, it's from June to September. And we'll sell Wolforth about 5 months of the year. Mm-hmm. I really kind of foresee that you can get burnout so fast that there is
it's a lot of work.
There's a time to let everybody take a break and I can grow year round. We harvest all but 1 week of the year. It's crazy what we can do. But are you going to have any staff left?
Right.
You know, are you going to have are you going to have yourself, Sandy, left? You know, I don't know. You know,
right. It's a lot of labor.
You know, and there's my family still farm. We're still cotton, Milo. We have all the crops too. And, and so this vegetable deal is awesome. But I mean, it's the 17 acres of straight vegetable farming is so intense. I built everything on a 30 inch bed with 10 inch centers.
Okay.
What that is the old 40 inch. Planters.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
That way you have 10 inch walkways and 30 inches of plant bed. And some of those rows we harvested and planted 8 times through the year. You start doing the math on that. You know, you're legitimately once a month you're turning that bed. Like for example, like a radish, is only 22 days and lettuce is less than, you know, you can get away with 40 days. I mean, it's just incredible how fast you can go. So, and then the wintertime, you slide into a bunch of cooking greens that you can go through the winter with.
You know, I think it really is interesting because I agree with you about Plainview because when I saw that you were opening, I was like,
yeah.
I wonder if there's enough, not even just discretionary money, but is the culture
That's
right?
A great
and
point.
That, boy, that tells me so much about how much people that I would not have even thought would be thinking and caring about where my food comes from, they are.
It's huge. I really have to commend the Hispanic culture of all people. They really do care about fresh food.
Yeah.
And you could tell the difference, you know, fresh cilantro versus store-bought cilantro. It's insane. And they crave that. And I do too, quite frankly. I love cilantro. There's just people that say it tastes like soap. But
I've heard that
I guess
too,
I'm blessed. I don't have to. Have to have that, you know, but you know they really crave fresh. The caveat to all this is still price,
right?
And yes, I still cut out all the middlemen, but I still pay top dollar to the employees, and I still the expenses you have at a store
It's
still there, and so that's the only restriction, I think, for us to truly grow is we got to get our price down to here.
Yeah.
So, and I recognize that. I mean, I understand that.
Right. Yeah.
So
that's you know, like any new market, that really is that is a struggle. You know, and the reason it's cheaper at the store is because it's scale. It's industrial, and you know, I was in California recently and saw a lot of those crops. I mean, so much diversity, you know, and still a lot of labor intensive crops, you know, and
you know, it's not necessarily the harvest of the crop. It's the minute after you harvest that crop. That's where the work starts. And you know, when you cut wheat, you cut the grain, you put it in the truck, haul it to the elevator, 3 guys can do it.
Right.
And then cut 60 acres in a day. On the vegetable deal, you may only harvest, a bed of lettuce and it takes you, 2 to 3 hours. Granted, that bed of lettuce can make $1,600 to $1,800 a bed. I mean, it's we're running right now about 60 cents an ounce on our lettuce. And, and when you start selling stuff by the ounce, it's a whole lot cooler than by the bushel.
Wow. That's really exciting.
So, and our beef is probably the secondary thing that I'd love to dive into.
Yeah, let's do it.
The beef side has probably been the most intriguing. I thought I knew a lot about cattle until I started killing my own beef.
So are you processing them yourself?
I do not. What are you doing? No, there's better people in this world who do a better job than I would.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to
do
that either.
And so Keeters and Tulia cuts the majority of ours.
Okay.
We'll slide some down to local cuts. Mm-hmm. They got an awesome summer sausage. Let me sell that one. So the beef side, you think you know your cattle until you start killing them. And when that hide comes off and you cut him open, you figure out what he is.
Mm-hmm.
And the consumer drives that. And the consumer cares about it.
Yes.
Without a doubt. And more important, they don't care about it. They want to know so much because they don't know.
Right.
And I think
that's true.
I think the American rancher, we have failed that consumer by driving ourselves so far apart. You know, we've let...
There's a huge gap.
There's too many people in between that, that grass and that plate. You know, there's a lot. I am okay with some of the stuff, like the hormones and stuff. Personally, I'm not going to get into it, but the consumer doesn't want it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so as a producer, I'm going to provide what they're willing to pay for. Mm-hmm. And so if they say no hormones, you bet. Says, well, we're going no ionophores. You bet. If you don't want it, that's fine.
Because that consumer is your customer.
That's right, and they drive it.
They drive that.
With the vegetables, you know, we see it every day. Organic, they're not true in our area.
Right
here, in this area, they're not. It's not a big factor for them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But they want to know you personally. They want to know your story, and they want to know the job that you're doing. That's what they care about.
Yes, the story.
Yeah.
They want the story.
They want it, and it matters to them.
And I'm so glad it does.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, when you walk into Sam's Club or wherever and you go buy that spinach, you don't have a clue where that came from.
Right.
And no fault to them, but it's just how our production model's been made. I would encourage everybody to go try fresh spinach. You will absolutely I hate spinach. Well, have you tried it fresh?
Wow.
You know, have you ever had a fresh carrot? Have you ever had a fresh this? You
know? I know that's true. I grew carrots. We lived in Earth, Texas, 5 miles north of Earth.
Sure.
And I had a wonderful garden. The first year we moved there, it rained.
Yeah.
Where we moved south of Brownfield, it hadn't rained 18 months. And so we thought, we've moved to heaven, you know.
Yeah.
And we grew carrots that year. And oh, my goodness, they were so
tasty.
Good.
Yeah.
So good.
The sugar content just crazy when that stuff is grown, A, right, and B, it's you pull it and eat it that
and
next
you're,
day.
And it's just fresh. It's just eaten so quickly.
So I told my wife the other day, I can't wait for the tomatoes to come back just to have some acidity back in our diet again, you know.
You know, when recently Lacey and I were in London at a textile meeting.
Sure.
And there's a lot of conversation now about hides and people are wanting, they're banning getting hides from anywhere where there's deforestation. And so it's kind of, you know, shaking up some markets.
Yeah.
And one of the interesting things that they said was, you know, we need to find, you know, where can we get hides? And like, you want hides, we have hides.
Oh, yeah.
You know? There's so many hides. And they said, but they can't be marked up or scratched up. I'm like, there's nothing for them to touch where we are.
No, that's true. You know, and all these small packers, small lockers, they really have issues getting rid of their hides. And that's a great market for them to hold. You know, if they got $20 for them things, it would be amazing.
It would be. I don't know how you develop that supply chain when all of the tanning. I think we have 2 or 3 tanners left in the U.S. and they're with the Great Lakes. You know, it's because it takes so much water.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
It does. And it's not something I'm super familiar with, but I'm back to our vegetable conversation. My next exploration is added value.
Yes.
And and I don't want grandma's favorite hot sauce recipe. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about cutting a watermelon or cutting a cantaloupe or pico de gallo or something fresh. It's a salad. You know, mm-hmm. I want to own that side of it.
Yeah.
And so we actually put in a kitchen on the backside of our market. So we'll go to added value by the first of the end of the year.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so yeah. It's coming quick.
That's great. I know yesterday my son is from China, uh-huh. and he loves kimchi. And he was asking, where can I get local kimchi from a Chinese friend? She said, in your kitchen. You have to make it.
yep, exactly. There's some things you just kind of got to make.
When you're going to do value added in your kitchen,
yeah.
you're going to be, what's the consumer going to come in and find then at Frontier Market?
You know, I have a pretty big goal of having a salad bar, 100% fresh salad bar.
Oh,
that's my ultimate. I wanted to have a restaurant. My initial thing was having a farm table restaurant.
Yes.
there's a really deep rabbit hole that I got in touch with a chef from New York.
Okay.
And I love it. A story is very long. But he basically told me, he said, there's no way you can make it work without, you know, $100 plate price tag. And yeah. I was like, yeah, that's pretty high, you know. That's a lot of money. But I agree with him. Our price point, it would just get so out of hand.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why on this added value deal, like I want a salad bar. I want fresh pico. That's a huge one for us. You know, just simple things like chopped onion, chopped jalapeno, mm-hmm. the things that you can just go dump out in your refrigerator and be done.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's where I want to head.
Yeah.
You know, some of the added value stuff you have in grocery stores now, some of that stuff is kind of the end of its life anyway, so they'll cut it up and,
yes.
and
put it right.
In a jar.
Are you passionate about conservation and climate-smart agriculture? Join the Working Lands Climate Corps with the Sandhill Area Research Association. We're looking for dedicated individuals to engage in hands-on conservation projects and to educate local communities. As a full-time member, you'll receive a living allowance, health care, and child care coverage as needed. Apply now at sarah-conservation.com. Gain valuable skills, make a difference, and help build a sustainable future.
That's interesting. I've been traveling with an ag leadership group, mm-hmm. The Texas Agriculture Lifetime Leadership, TALA program.
That's part of that.
Oh, it's a phenomenal program. Sure. I've learned so much in these last 2 years, and we visited places like that mm-hmm. that have added, you know, that, you know, chopping and those kind of things. And it's fun to see, you know, places like that are still, you know, hiring people, they're paying their employees mm-hmm. well. There's, in particular, a place we went to in New York that was distribution that was really nice to see, you know, employees that have been there for years and years and years, you know.
Yeah.
And I do think that's something that is often misunderstood in the ag world.
It is.
You know. And I'm not to say that there haven't been problems in the past,
right.
you know, but I do think so often the people that work for us work with us, really.
That's true. I actually have two of the same employees I started with. And those two, actually two women, they are absolutely phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And, there's a point in time it's like, all right, so you tell me what I need to do, you know, for you, you know, because they are that good. And,
that's great.
You know, that workforce, everybody complains about labor until they pay them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you pay your labor well, mm-hmm. and you know, they get to the benefits.
Yeah, you know, I've heard someone say lately, it's not that the kids, that people don't want to work, that they're not going to work for you for what you've been paying.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And I have one of the sons, he came back, and this guy is just rock star good. And I'm like, man, you can almost have the farm if you want to.
Wow.
And so it's very intriguing that even him as a 20-year-old has came back to the farm,
mm-hmm.
and he wants to pursue this. And I really think it boils down to is there's been such a disconnect to food, and now he's had this fresh food, and now it's like, mm-hmm. well, I'm not going to eat anything else.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. You want other people to experience that.
You know, there's something about getting back to the farm, putting some dirt between your hands,
mm-hmm.
watching that tomato grow, watching that X grow, and then harvesting it.
Yeah.
And getting to do it.
I do love to see it. There really is a revival of people caring about those things.
There is. Mm-hmm. And like I said, back to our old cotton ground, you know, that old cotton ground that was depleted and old.
Right.
And it's been tough getting that ground even close to being back productive again. We've had some failures, and the number one failure that I'm having is this transplant shock.
I can see that.
When you our soil temps and our I guess a specific heat, I don't really know what it really boils down to, but it's very hard to get our crop established.
Are you buying your seedlings? Are you growing your
We grow them. Once you buy them,
That's when it gets expensive.
It really
too, right?
Fast.
And
it really takes.
Is that something that you've considered adding to your catalog of inventory or whatever, where you are selling? Things like that.
You know, it's very interesting that there's a value to that because Lone Star Snap.
Oh, Snap!
They
Snap
actually
benefits.
Offer money for you to buy your own seedlings, which means that State of Texas values that.
Interesting.
I think it's a very, thoughtful process.
Yeah, that's really great to know.
If you have a Lone Star card, you can buy your seedlings from a Snap dealer.
Yeah, that's so interesting.
So, what I do it, I thought about doing a small section.
Just see what happens.
Overgrow it, maybe 30%, and sell that off.
Yeah. So your cattle, when you how are they solely now marketed through the store, or do you also have an online?
Yeah, that's
option?
That's great. So initially my granddad started our cattle business back in the 70s, and he actually had some black body cows. He went and bought a limousine bull when the limousines were hot and heavy, and they were 10-foot tall, red and apple butted and chicken legged. They were awful cattle. And now, through the years, with a lot of crossbreeding, now we've kind of got, we're still in the limousine breed. Dad was selling a bunch of limousine bulls. We still are. But like I said, that group of calves is now, it's pretty proud to say, is where everyone is going through the store.
That's great.
And, you'll cull the runts off for sure. Mm-hmm. But what we have done also is do a bunch of genomic testing on those cattle. Mm-hmm. And so Neogen has a very unique deal. Neogen, Zoetis, they both have, they're pretty similar. I know they don't want to hear that, but they are. But they
take
have a
that
set
one
out. That's right. They have a set of profiles, that you can get back, 16 traits. And we've really honed in on about three of them. And one of them is a tenderness trait. And it's actually genetic. Even though that CAB, touts the white fat and the marbling, that's what everybody wants to tout. That they have prime yield grade twos.
Right.
But there's I've had some, I didn't tell anybody this, but I've had some pretty awesome some steaks that aren't necessarily that marbled, but they're tender. Why is this calf so tender? You cut it with a fork. Why is that the case?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that tenderness and marbling, people tie them together, but they're so different. And I think that needs to be explored.
That is really interesting. And I think hopefully for some of our listeners, this is all new. I don't think people really understand the science that goes into building over generations, building your specific herd and what you're going for. And for you to be able to go, we're going to test this, we're going to see what, you're looking for that specific gene that's creating that tenderness, and you're going to breed that cow increase that.
That's something people really need to learn or understand or discover. So as a storefront, since we own the storefront, I'm thinking I'm breeding cattle for 5 years down the road today.
Yeah.
The conception and the pasture right now is for, four to the fifth year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to make breeding decisions next year already for the sixth year.
Mm-hmm. People think farmers aren't smart.
saddle up.
I just think you have no idea what all goes into this.
Every old codger, every person who's talked to an old codger one time in their life with some cover overalls and the hay in their mouth or whatever they want to call it. But they need to, there's a lot of wisdom in those.
Yes.
And so with this genomic testing, we've really been able, what's been so cool is we've taken out heart disease of our cattle. The past 2.5 years, we only had one calf. They always talk about the death loss at the end of the road when he's about 14, 50, fixing to go to the kill floor and falls over dead. Well, what happened to him? Did he get in the Well, it's our heart disease.
Yeah.
And so it gives you a risk factor. We could take those cattle out. Another big one is we've taken out all of the cattle that aren't going to gain. And that's huge for the, that's called a price point. Mm-hmm. That's huge. So for $15, I can take this test, genomically take these tests of these cattle, and I can see verbatim if they're going to gain good, they're not going to gain good. You know, I got a history of them.
That's amazing.
And I think this is the next step for the cattle industry. People are going to argue with this, but I think it needs to happen to really hone in on this, and I think it can elevate the whole cattle herd very fast.
You know, I with Tall, we visited a genetics company,
sure.
They have bred a cow that drinks like 30% less water,
sure.
and produces like 40% less.
Yeah,
I can't remember the numbers, but it's one of those things that you're like, that's like a Nobel Prize winning.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
Invention, you know what I mean? And he is, you know, taking and donating, you know, to different breeds and
sure.
different areas and in places like India and stuff, mm-hmm. you know, because, and he's really contributing to
yep.
a lot of environmental mm-hmm. sustainability.
Yeah.
And although I would argue that beef are great for the environment.
I would too, you know, and, you know, cattle has always been a staple on our farm, even from the, you know, the 60s, I guess, 60 something. And they've been such a staple. And they've been such a blessing and a curse. And the reason I say that is you want them on the farm because of that nutrient cycling.
Mm-hmm.
But B, they really can terrorize a rotation.
We were just having this conversation mm-hmm. about mob grazing.
Yeah.
Are y'all implementing any of those? Yeah. Well, I guess you would call newer.
Yeah, the Regen Ag uh-huh. stuff. And I am so intrigued. Like,
yeah.
I want it to work so bad that we've tried.
So and I just was at Mim's Ranch down in Marfa. Mm-hmm. So interesting
yeah.
there. They're about to release all of this data. That's mm-hmm. so interesting. So I'm curious what all y'all have done.
So where I'm intrigued is okay, on those 120 acre circles that you don't have enough water to water the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So now we cut it back to half, right? So now you have 60 acres mm-hmm. that you have 300 gallons a minute on. Now you're down, okay, now we don't have enough water for that. So let's go down to 40 acres. You know, now we're down to a third. So what do you do with those two thirds of dry land acres?
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be my generation's conquest.
Well, you'll need to go and listen to the podcast with Jeremy Brown because we had that exact same discussion.
Yeah. And so we have played with the cover crops and stuff too. And
yeah.
It hadn't fit us yet. I'm mm-hmm. not saying we haven't stopped trying.
Yeah.
We have not got it right.
I love, you know, that's, we, earlier today we had a round table with three different farmers with very different techniques mm-hmm. to kind of showcase that, you know, there's never going to be a one-size-fits-all.
No, it's not. And I really think the ag industry in general has to be very careful of that.
Yeah.
You know, putting everybody pissed in this box, and if you don't farm this box, and you're mm-hmm. either docked, ridiculed, or outcasted.
Right.
And I truly believe there's still a place for mm-hmm. conventional ag, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. I still think there's mm-hmm. a place for this. And just like the vegetable deal.
You know, it is a, I agree with you
yeah.
in that because, you know, we are privileged
mm-hmm.
to be able to go into, have access to a frontier market
yeah.
and to go there. But there are huge portions of the world that don't have that privilege.
No, no doubt.
And we don't want to take away from them the ability to eat.
That's right. That's right. You know, and I really, like I said, I still love the regenerative movement. I think there's some really cool concepts. And I still, there's still some things that I'm like, okay, yeah, I believe in the animal part. I believe in a lot of these
right.
parts.
Yep.
I just have not found the combination for the mm-hmm. covers to make sense yet.
Yeah.
And personally on our farm, we found more valuable in keeping those crop residues
uh-huh.
than trying to plant something
yes.
on top of something, on
right.
top of something else to build uh-huh. that. That's where we're at right.
right
now.
Yeah.
On the vegetable side, it's been very hard to play with the cover game for
mm-hmm.
us. You know, we're already at a water deficit.
Right.
And personally, if we dive off the water deficit.
Yeah.
I don't know. I hadn't, like I said, right. That's one that I really haven't.
Well, and, you know, one of the things that we talked about in the roundtable is just, you know, it can't, it's such a long term.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of those regenerative things, you have to be able to be in a place where can you do something that you're not going to see benefits from for
point.
Several years, you know, and so, you know, and that's why we're talking about, you know, the new Climate Smart Ag that's there,
yes.
money that's there for some of those things and the good and the bad of all of that too. So,
yeah, no, that's a great point. And there's a lot of money right now fixing to be involved, you know.
There's a lot of money out there for this.
And a lot. You know, I'm here for it. I think it's great that people are throwing money at this game. To try to find the recipe.
Yep.
I think there's going to be a tougher time for the recipe to work until we see, you know, a couple of generations down the road.
Yeah, yeah. So tell us, tell people that are listening if they want to. Where do they find you on social media?
Yeah. So we're always on Facebook, Instagram. We have.
Are you just Frontier Market?
Frontier Markets, yep. And the other one is we have an online store through Barn to Door. You can find us there, and we are not shipping yet.
Okay.
But because the shipping is.
Woo! Shipping meat. Man, yeah.
You just take the price and double it.
Yes.
So if you want our meat, we'll ship it to you, but you pay for the shipping.
Yeah.
So, and then we also you pick up in store. And I guess it kind of goes back to our philosophies. I want it so fresh that there is no question on it.
Yeah.
That's where we're getting paid at. That's what people know us for. And it's really catching on.
Well, I'm excited about what you're doing. And 45 different vegetables. I'm like, I didn't even know there were 45. I admit, I kind of have a childish type of palate.
Sure.
It's not very mature.
You know, you have a split of a fast rotation and a long rotation. And so those fast rotation crops is ones you may not necessarily eat a lot of. You know, that'd be kind of like Swiss chard.
Yes, okay.
Collard greens, that kind of stuff. And the long rotation is what everybody... There's a reason why everybody comes in July and August. They want their black-eyed peas and sweet corn and green beans.
Now you're talking my language.
Oh yeah, that's the cream of the crop. So
exactly. Well, Layton, thanks again
for
joining us, and I really appreciate what you're doing and pioneering, making a go of it. And so I might have to have a visit with your dad sometime.
Well,
that would be so fun.
One more caveat here before we close up.
Okay.
As a young producer. If you're truly are kind of stuck, you know, stuck in the ways you think you have an acre somewhere to grow something direct. And I don't know what that direct market is. You know, it could be, I love the wheat deal, you know, wheat to grind.
Yes.
I love the watermelon, the melon market. I love, there's so many things you can just we're going to grow some strawberries. But there's so many markets that there is available to be very, very good at. And if you're a young producer right now, you have an unprecedented demand to sell that crop. You just got to do a little bit more than go with a co-op and sell your stuff.
Yes.
And I'm telling you, as a young producer, there is.
But that could be the difference between being able to stay in and
that's true.
Covering some of those expenses at home.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. And so that I said, young producer, even though old, I mean, if you're fix and go out, try it.
That's great to know. It's great to know that people are really, I mean, it really truly is bringing in an income.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No doubt. No, it's actually, I would love to see what year two to year, or year three to year six looks like. Right now we're faced with a question is how much are we going to grow?
Right. Yeah, that's always.
And with that being said, is it 20%? Is it 40%? Is it 60%? Because the caveat is where do I get the cattle at? We're buying back some of the genetics out of our bulls from other producers, but do I have enough cattle? We killed 70 this past year. Do I need 150 this coming year? You know, I don't know.
I cannot believe you sold 3 cows in 6 minutes.
Yeah, that was back in the good days. That's got to set a record.
It was
pretty wild. And back to the direct markets too. The key is being known to being that guy.
Yes.
You know, are you that guy for that product?
Right. I would also suggest there's a conference called Unconventional Ag.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good place for farmers. You know, there's some conferences out there where farmers are not going to them.
Right.
But those wholesalers, mm-hmm. those folks that are looking for those farmers, they're going there, yep. anticipating the farmers, and the farmers aren't there.
Right.
So it's a really good opportunity to get into some of those places.
I'm telling you, I was saved on blue in the face, but if you're a young person and you're looking for an option, there's no reason why you shouldn't look at something small.
That's crazy.
If you're a watermelon guy, you can buy 8,000 to 9,000 an acre pretty easy. Wow. Direct sales.
Yeah.
There's no reason you couldn't.
That's amazing. Well, thanks for coming and thanks for sharing all of that with us. I mean, that's don't want you to give away your market.
Plenty to go around. Yes, ma'am.
Well, thanks for joining us and friends that are listening and watching. Thanks again for being with us. And we will see you next time on another edition of Conservation Stories.